You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, the way we auto-started is good morbid, and I say that because I got myself one of those. I use a swipe keyboard, and Microsoft, as you guys may have seen, retired their WordFlow keyboard that they've been using for a while. And I really liked WordFlow. I taught a lot of things. It had learned a lot of things. But now, SwiftKey is what Microsoft says you should use because that was one that they bought. They're retiring the Microsoft keyboard, which this one is not nearly as good as the Microsoft one. But I figure, okay, it's going to go away at some point. I'll start using it. So I start using it, and I text someone good morning, and it changed it to good morbid. So now that's how me and my friend greet each other daily, is good morbid to you.
I never liked SwiftKey. That was one of the first third-party keyboards to come out, and I don't know, something about it I didn't like, but the Microsoft one and now the one I use, the Google one, those are both great.
I'm thinking of going back to the Google one since Microsoft got rid of the one that they had. I like the Microsoft one better than what they bought, so that's maybe what I'm going to go back with. So I want to start things off with some follow-up from last week. I was listening to our last week's episode, and we talked about, hey, we're not sure what the HomePod is going to support as far as Siri goes right out of the box, and I did a little digging. And of course, HomePod will, of course, support HomeKit on day one, according to the HomePod site on Apple.com. All the things that I had read prior in the last few weeks, it was kind of up in the air because, you know, the demos weren't doing it. And you know, if you go back and you watch the WWDC announcement, they weren't really as forthcoming with it. But it looks like it's going to be fine. So I'm at least excited about that. So I did want to correct that since we were ambiguous about it last week. Jumping into this week's stories. So let's talk about, let's start with the iPhone 8 facial recognitions, or iPhone Pro, if you will. We're still not sure what it's going to be called, of course. It looks like it's going to support payments, multiple faces, and third-party apps out of the box, according to an article that we found, which we'll put in the show notes. And you have to figure this was going to be the case. I mean, if they're not going to have Touch ID, it's not going to have a Touch ID sensor in the screen. You're not going to be able to press a home button. You would hope so, but I'm really not sure how that's going to work. You know, the facial recognition is still sort of a... I'm sure they're going to have made this somehow secure, but I'm really fascinated. I can't wait for the announcement because I want to know how they're going to make facial recognition as secure as something that they can count on, like they can the Touch ID.
Yeah, because nobody else has been able to do this. I mean, we've seen multiple iterations of facial recognition on different devices, and it's always worked, but it's never been secure enough for all the things that Apple does with Touch ID now. So I'm definitely interested, and I'm definitely not looking forward to losing my home button and Touch ID or however that's going to work. Apple's got a good thing there, so let's don't break it.
I just can't imagine having to, for example, turn the light on in the middle of the night so that I can unlock my phone because it needs to see my face. Not that that's probably a thing. They'll do something to fix that, but I could just...
Your phone glows so bright that it'll probably... The light coming off of your phone will probably provide enough illumination, I would have to guess.
Yeah, I imagine so. It's just such a strange change in paradigm. I'm so used to just touching my finger to it, ready to go. It's just a strange thing. Like, it's almost like you're having to take a selfie every time you want to use your phone.
Well, to be fair, and again, since we don't know, this is all speculation, but there's infrared sensors that are supposed to be inside of this new phone. That was what the iOS 11 code dig turned up. So if that's the case, if it's using infrared, it's not going to need visible spectrum to be able to do it. Again, just speculation. That would be kind of a lame thing if you had to have, you know, visible light to be able to unlock. I don't think that's going to be the case.
App idea right here. It takes a picture every time you unlock your phone, and that way you can see your face change over time. Like that app that used to do that where you would be reminded to take your picture every day. This just automatically takes your picture every time you unlock your phone, and then you just get this big series of you know, you can make a little movie out of all your face screenshots. That would be kind of cool.
From the most unflattering angle ever, no thank you. The same reason I don't want a camera on my Apple Watch, because I don't want to see up my nose every single picture that I would have. No, this would... And, you know, your chin's kind of angled down. It's the worst, literally the worst angle you could ever take a picture from. No thank you. Please don't do that ever.
No, you've got to do that up above angle that everybody uses on dating sites, you know, that basically hides anything about yourself except your face. And even then, it you know, that's easily everybody's best angle, is from up high looking down.
Great for getting rid of double chins.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a chin reducer.
a 10-minute silent song is climbing the iTunes charts, which this makes me kind of happy because for years, I have complained about this. And I know, first world problem. But every time I would get in my car in the past decade prior to this year for this vehicle, randomly, my phone would just decide to start playing a song. It would bond, and it wouldn't do it every single time, but it did it enough that it was annoying. So you'd get these, you'd get in, and all of a sudden, maybe your in-laws were in there, and some gangster rap song would start playing inappropriately, and you'd have to go, I have no idea how this got there. Let me stop that. I don't know what these crazy phones are doing. And meanwhile, it's whatever horrible things in your library, we'll just decide to start playing.
Brian starts doing his Office Space impression in the car, rapping going down the road like Michael
Bolton.
Bolton.
Exactly. That's you're not far off. But yeah, this was always a problem for me, that it would bond to the car and just randomly decide to start playing music. Sometimes it was frequent, sometimes it would wait a while, but totally annoying every single time. So I used to tell people this, and I had people that wouldn't believe me. Oh, it's just your stupid iPhone, my Android-loving friend would say. And maybe he's right if it's climbing the charts on the iTunes store. But I actually made a song that was called A-A-A-A-A that was just 10 minutes of silence. I've done this before. It never occurred to me to submit it to the iTunes store for people to download it, but I had done this when this was still a thing for me. Jim, has this ever happened to you?
Yeah, not in my car. I guess whatever in the Acura, it works fine. But I end up with a lot of rental cars because I travel, and it's just like you said, completely random. Some rental cars, you just get in, you pair your phone, and it just starts playing. And I've got one song that starts with like an A with one of the little tick marks or something like that by Bibio. That's the one that always starts playing, and it's a nice chill kind of song. So it's never anything like gangster rap, but it's always that song because it is first alphabetically in my library according to iTunes. It took me a while to realize what was happening here, why it kept playing that song. I'm like, oh, okay, it's first. But yeah, it with the rental cars, and I didn't pay enough attention to be able to tell you, okay, it was like this, brand of car, this make or model or whatever that always did it. But it's definitely happened to me many times where in rental cars, it'll just, as soon as you start the car up, it starts playing that one song.
Since I use Spotify, but I do have a couple of things on my iTunes library because they're not available on Spotify, like the band Tool, I have those saved in my phone. So what's strange, though, is every time I get in my car and hook it up, it always starts with a Tool song called Swamp Song on their album Undertow, which is totally not the first thing in the iTunes library, and it still plays that song first every time.
Maybe the first thing alphabetically that you have downloaded to your phone. The way that I used to get around this, it was always music that was downloaded to the phone that would be the problem. So the way I had to get around it was to turn off downloads for both Spotify and Apple Music, and I had to turn off downloads over cellular. If I did that, then I had to purge all of the local music off the phone. So I had to live a completely streaming only life when it came to music. It was terrible. And then after a while, it started.
I could never do that. That would be brutal for me.
Well, you stream it only, or you would, what was the other thing? You could listen to XM if you had one of those over the thing or whatever. You could do the radio. You just had to do it over your cellular connection.
Yeah, but airplane mode, man. I listen to my, it's like my jam on the phone. And that's why I have all the stuff downloaded to my phone now, is so my 1.5 hours in the sky, I can listen to whatever I like.
How dare you be inconvenienced for 90 minutes?
Yeah, exactly. That's a true first world problem.
No, that was irony of ironies. When I got my new car in January, it doesn't have that problem anymore with Bluetooth, but it doesn't matter because I plug in and do CarPlay, which my car doesn't do wireless CarPlay. I think only one has in 2017. I think more are starting to, but they all support having to be plugged into Lightning port. So I turn off the Bluetooth anyway in my car. I don't use it. But if I did, it doesn't seem to have that problem anymore, which, of course, it gets solved when I start using the thing that doesn't require it anymore. So very annoying.
So how many downloads do you think this thing's got if it was shooting up the charts? And what is that, $1 a pop, right? And I don't know what the cut is on music. I mean, I know on apps it was 70-30 with some sort of scale where it cuts back from 70-30, but I don't even know what the cut is for music. But this guy, I mean, that's pretty brilliant to be able to put that in. I mean, first for Apple to let them put it in the store, I guess they really wouldn't. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I've made silent ringtones before so I could have use that, but I never thought of a silent audio track like this to fix this problem. This is pretty pretty cool.
So did the guy do it so that Apple would fix the problem, or is this a more innate sort of USB radio type deal.
Well, first of all, the song is 99 cents, and it's a 70-30 split, I think. This isn't Apple's problem to fix, and this was always my argument, too, when I would get into it with my Android buddy, was this is not an Apple thing. What this is a car thing. So what I suspect the true problem is that, you know, when you're developing these things in cars, that technology is being developed years ahead of time, right? They work on things pretty far out. These take a long lead time a lot of times. And I think this is a holdover from the days when cars got the iPod connectivity. And the assumption was, if I'm plugging something in, then I want to listen to music, so let me go ahead and start that for you. This is the only thing that I can think of, because I can't think of any other reason that this behavior would even exist. And when they move things from the cord solution to the cordless solution with Bluetooth, I think they just held that paradigm in place of, oh, if I have this and there's a music player, they must want to listen to music, so go ahead and start it up. That's the only thing I can think of. And it's so random. Just like Jim, in 2016, I rented a lot of cars, and it didn't matter. Ford, Chevy, Mercedes, whatever, they all randomly would do it. Sometimes they would, sometimes they wouldn't, but it wasn't just any one manufacturer. And if you Google for this problem, you'll see that Android users have the same problem. It's not just relegated to the iPhone.
Right. It's a Bluetooth car problem, not a device problem. But this is a solution for the Apple device. I guess it would work on Android, too, if you put it on there. But maybe not for Brad's problem, because if it's playing Tool, this song, no matter how it sorts in your library, may not work.
Again, it's whatever you have downloaded to the phone. And sometimes if you have the offload, like sometimes if you have things cleared, set to clear the music, if you're, you know, or clear your storage as things are needed, I could see weird circumstances where this would happen. Maybe if you have shuffle turned on or something, I don't know. It is sort of a weird thing, but I always had usually, because sometimes I wouldn't get always the song that was A, but I'd make sure the shuffle was turned off. Very annoying, but understandable at least that this is happening. I wish I had thought of uploading that song. That would have been a smart thing. Not too late for you to upload some of your silent ringtones in there, Jim.
Somebody's going to jump on that. You watch.
Be surprised if they haven't already. So let's see what else is going on. Oh, there's a competitor to Colorware. So we've talked about Colorware painting your AirPods, and I think we discussed how I bought a spare pair of AirPods and I wanted to send them into Colorware and have them paint them, and they took that option away. Well, there is a competitor now called BlackPods, and they don't do the multicolored options that Colorware does. They have two, black and black. It's a glossy black or matte black that they'll do, and I think they charge $99 if you want them painted. So the funny thing is, if you want glossy, it's $99. If you want the matte black, it's $119. I don't know why matte black is more expensive. You figure glossy black would be probably the harder one to do. I haven't really decided. I'm sort of leaning toward the glossy black. I do worry a little bit how they're going to handle being scuffed or the sort of wear and tear the case is gonna look after that, and whether or not I'd even want the case painted. But I don't think you have an option. I think if you do it, you got to go for all of them being painted.
I would definitely go matte. I think the matte would look cooler, and it would probably age better than the glossy would.
I would agree, as the owner of a jet black iPhone that I never take out of the case, so I'm wondering why I got jet black in the first place. Just because I've seen the horror stories of people who have the jet black phone, and it does not look good after a little bit of time. Of course, that is anodized aluminum, or aluminium, if you will, and that has different properties than the plastic, so maybe that is a case that, you know, the jet black phones don't seem to age as well, or hold up as well, but it does make me a little bit nervous to go the glossy, so I am sort of leaning toward the matte black. I think it would be more durable, and since I use mine a lot, might not be a bad idea. Of course, now I have two pairs, and I'm waiting for that one pair to die or get worn out or lost or something, but we'll see. I'm definitely leaning toward getting those painted, especially now that there's someone that will do it and hasn't taken the option away, so you have to buy it through them.
I gotta think Apple is gonna do something about this soon, right? They're gonna release some colors, maybe at Christmas time, AirPods in black or red for, you know, the whatever they call the red ones, what are they, product red.
So they're coming out on a year since they were announced, right? September will mark a year. I checked last night, there is still a 4-week wait. That's down from the 6 weeks that it's been since the general availability. They didn't actually come out until December. So we're about 8 months in, and you still can't just waltz in and buy a pair. That's nuts. They are so far behind. These things must be so hard to make. Because if Apple, who's used to making how many, you know, they sell what, 70
million iPhones a day?
Yeah, something like that. There's like 70 million iPhones a quarter, and they can't seem to make enough AirPods quickly enough this far in. Nobody has the supply chain licked like Apple does, and they still can't even get this. This must be really hard to make at scale, I'm guessing.
I don't know why they'd ever make them any other color than white. I mean, Apple's sort of notorious for making all of their accessories white. I mean, your power cable has been white ever since they switched over from that clear power cable that they used to send you with the old iMacs. if y'all remember that. That's true. Power cable.
Power cable's white. The earbuds have always been white. The pencil's white. The adapters are white.
Now, you do bring up a good point that most of their accessories do have that signature color, and they don't seem to spend a lot of time outside of the phones or cases customizing things. So we'll see, but at least I have an option, and I may or may not do it, but I'm leaning toward it. It's nice to know that Colorware is not the only game in town for doing this.
I meant to bring this up last week, and I forgot about it, and this conversation reminded me. I actually saw a red iPhone in the wild. I had lunch with like 5 or 6 coworkers last week, and one of them just pulled out of his pocket a red iPhone, no case or anything. I was like, wow. Number one, I hadn't seen one out in the wild, and no case or anything, just that product red iPhone. So, first one I'd seen like outside the store.
To be totally honest, if they had the product red stuff available day one, I would probably buy it and probably go caseless. I would be okay with doing that. And it's a shame that they wait.
Even with the white front?
Well, okay, so let me make a caveat to that. I would probably buy one of those things that you've seen on the internet that I think we talked about, where you could put the, it's sort of a screen protector, but it has like the black bezel built into it. I would put that over the front. Now the home button would still be white. Nothing I could do about that, but I would at least make the bezel black. If they had a black front and the black button.
You just put a little nail polish on it.
Okay, so here you go. iPhone 8, no bezel, red back. I would totally be in on that day one.
Oh, absolutely. And caseless too, on top of that, which I normally do a case just because, especially with the jet black, I was just afraid I'll scratch it. You know, this was a mistake, but I would go caseless on that. I say this as someone who right now has been sporting a red case on his iPhone for, you know, months, but still, I would definitely jump in on that.
Yeah, this might be a solution to, you know, like if you ever wanted the silverback one but didn't want the white front. Now, maybe with this new iPhone, we don't have to worry about the white front anymore since the whole front is going to be glass, you know, going to be the screen, that you could actually get a stainless backed iPhone and not have to worry about the white front, which I just wouldn't want. So I think if they did that, I haven't even considered that until this conversation. I would definitely switch just because I've always wanted something different, but I never wanted the white front iPhone.
You know, I never thought about it either until you mentioned it just now. I would definitely be open to some of the different backs on it if the bezel's not an issue, because I hate the white bezel. I would definitely look at getting something different than what I've done so far. So that's a good point. It's distracting when you're trying to watch a video to have that white screen around it. It's just not aesthetically pleasing to me at all.
Same here. Brad, I see you shaking your head. You're going to show us your white bezel?
What in the world? Why do you have a white bezeled iPhone?
Because I like it. And it's all about personal preference.
I like it a lot.
In the abstract, you know, it doesn't seem like a bad idea. Like, I don't know, if I walk this back for a minute, the phone may not bother me as much as the iPad, because I spend more time, if I'm going to watch something, I'll probably watch it on the iPad more than I will the phone. So, you know, that would probably bother me a little less on the phone. I still don't like it, but I could at least see it. But I couldn't have a white bezeled iPad. Yeah. No.
Yeah, the iPad is a black bezel.
The only white I've ever had was the original iPad Air. I got a white front because when I went to go buy it in the store, the black ones were already sold out and I wanted it, and so that's what I bought. Yeah, I had it for a year or so, but I wouldn't do it again on the iPad for sure.
So it looks like construction workers are posting Snapchat stories from inside Apple Park. Have you guys seen this?
I clicked on your link, and that is pretty neat. You know, the nature of Snapchat is things disappear. I'm sure, you know, the link that you sent us had some saved, and now that it's been pushed out there, one of two things are going to happen. Somebody's going to start saving a lot more of them, and we're going to be able to go to some site and look at a lot of them, or Apple's going to shut that stuff down really fast, and these are going to just disappear. So one of those two things is going to happen.
They'll be checking people's phones at the door before they walk onto the construction site.
I don't know what they would do. There's no way really you can prevent it, but I think it's kind of neat that exists. I don't imagine Apple having much of a sense of humor about that.
You think?
But people are curious. They want to see it, and you know, it's candid shots that you'll never get again. And of course, you know, the ephemeral nature of Snapchat, it'll disappear, and that should be that. But of course, people are going to save them. It is kind of cool. I mean, none of us will ever see it again in this particular state. It's from a historical standpoint, it's kind of neat to see it while it's being built, because once it's done, that's it forever.
No, that's true. And I mean, that's one of the issues with Snapchat is, I mean, you can save your pictures from there, but 99% of people don't. I mean, they go up and then they disappear, you know, 24 hours later. So you know, hopefully these guys are taking some real pictures to save for themselves, because that's something that you can tell your kids in 50 years is, you know, I helped build the Apple spaceship, right? And here's some pictures.
As an aside, it just it kind of makes me laugh a little bit that Snapchat's stock is in the toilet right now. They are hurting. Amazon. Instagram really, really kneecapped them hard by implementing those features. I know a lot of people are like, oh, that should have never happened. They're copying. Hey, as we've seen with some certain phone manufacturers who get just a slap on the wrist when they do it, it's not who's first, it's who's best.
Facebook has put that, I don't know what you want to call it, that UI element in everything they've got now. I mean, they put it in Instagram, they put it in Facebook. I mean, it just like, okay, here, you got something new? That's neat. We're going to copy it. I mean, and now with the filters and everything else, I mean, when Apple does something? I'm
Sherlocking.
Yeah, they really Sherlocked pretty much the whole Snapchat platform. Like the whole company, they Sherlocked.
I think you can't really put your eggs in one basket when it comes to having a feature. This was the, remember when Steve Jobs went and visited Dropbox and said, you're a feature, not a product. And, you know, Dropbox is still around, but hey, iCloud, it does a pretty good job of syncing. It does a better job than I ever expected it would. I thought I would never trust iCloud Drive with anything or iCloud Sync. But my notes, when I start a note on my phone or my iPad or my Mac, it is there quicker than, it beats Evernote. And never have any sync conflicts or anything like that. It just silently seems to work. It's one of those it just works types of things.
You can almost watch yourself type in notes. Like you could start typing on your iPad and then look on your Mac and pretty much just about watch yourself type on one device and sync to the other. It works that well.
We shouldn't be so excited about something working as advertised, but so often with Apple gets a bad rap on services, but wow, that iCloud sync when it comes between products has, I can remember the days when contacts used to eat my contacts on the regular. I used to have to back up my contacts like some sort of savage in like LDAP or vCard format so that I could get them back when iCloud would eat it, or I guess it was me.com in those days. And that was a routine thing. Like I used to, you'd be walking along, you'd look at your contacts and all of a sudden, all of your contacts would disappear. I had so many glitches back in those days. Hasn't happened in years. It works.
And there were contact backup apps on the App Store.
Yes.
Yeah. Me.com. That's a throwback to that. I don't want to have to remember. Wow.
They've come a long way since then. But again, I didn't mean to go too far down the Snapchat hole, but it makes me laugh. I mean, again, to your point, it's weird who uses what where. Like I have like 700 or something Facebook friends and not a single one of them. I think one in the entire time I've noticed the stories feature actually uses that feature. I have not seen anyone out of my 700 and some odd Facebook friends ever use that. But on Instagram, everybody uses that. It's so strange to me. And again, I'm not a big Snapchat user.
No, I agree.
Is it because all of your Facebook friends are adults? I feel like probably the kids would be trying the new features, whereas the adults just use the same thing over and over.
That's probably a lot to do with it. And again, the Instagram users tend to skew a lot younger. Like I'll put more stuff on Instagram than I will on Facebook just because I don't really have a lot to say on Facebook. And I like posting pictures and videos and things like that a lot more. So I don't even waste my time. Or if I do, I'll put it on Instagram and cross post to Facebook if, you know, in a rare case. But
yeah, Facebook is all the olds now and Instagram is all the not olds.
It's nice to have the difference, have the ephemeral and have the permanent in the same app. I think if Snapchat had been smart, they would have had an option for things to stick around. Like they could have copied Instagram in that regard. That would have been a really interesting move. I don't know why they haven't, right? Their whole thing is we're ephemeral, but yeah, when somebody else rips that off, what do you do? I don't know.
The first time I heard of Snapchat, that's what the stories were being written about is, you know, people are sending stuff to their, you know, girlfriends or boyfriends or significant others or, you know, people who aren't their significant others, even more importantly, like Wiener?
Anthony Wiener.
You know, those kind of things. So, you know, look, I'm a Snapchat fan. I use it. I like it.
That was the sensationalized version of it. I think the truth of it was for kids who didn't want their parents being able to snoop on what they did, having something that ephemeral was a little better. And I think that's why the audience tended to skew really young and still does, I think, to a large degree.
That makes perfect sense too, yeah. Okay. Yeah, just to put it out there just in time for your friends who are on that app all the time to be able to see it, and then it's gone again.
It was a great idea, but not unique. All right, moving right along. So something I never thought would be a big topic. I guess Gruber posted this week that Safari should show SVGs or favicons in tabs. And I've never really thought about this. I haven't used Chrome on the regular. Like, I'll have 1,000 tabs open in Safari. And yes, it is sort of crappy that you go by the text in the tab. And sometimes if you have all those open, it can be, you have to shuffle through it. And it's really, really cumbersome. But again, I got so used to it that I never realized how terrible. Yeah, it's pretty awful. So I guess that was a big discussion this week, was that why doesn't Safari do this? And this sparked a whole discussion on the internet, and people were pointing out that they use pin tabs, and inside of the pin tabs you actually get something, but you don't if you're using regular tabs. Jim, I think you probably have a lot of opinions on this.
So yeah, so after that story came out, I decided to do my own personal research. I knew we would be recording this weekend. So on Thursday, I switched from Safari back to Chrome for the last 48 hours or so. I've previously been a Chrome user. I've probably been using Safari on the regular for at least 6 months now. But since I got my new laptop, I don't think I've switched back to Chrome as my default browser. I do use it as my default on Windows when I'm doing Windows stuff for work. But I switched back to it on the Mac side, and I really like Chrome. I hate that I feel that way. It's like if I drank a Pepsi right now and I was just like, man, this is really good. I would feel really bad about that, and that would never happen because I'm a Coke Zero drinker.
Until that's discontinued in a couple of weeks.
Right.
But yes.
Right. And so it feels bad that, you know, it's kind of like somebody feeds me a steak and then somebody feeds me some like tofu, and I'm like, man, that tofu is really good. You know, I don't want to like the tofu more than the steak, and that would never happen. So I just, you know, the fav icons and tabs is a great thing. I think the extensions that you can put in Chrome. There's a couple of download extensions and a couple other things that are really handy. One of the OCD things that I noticed yesterday that I guess I'd never really realized is in Chrome, the tab bar is always available, even with one tab open. So the window height stays the same, whereas in Safari, if you've got three tabs open and you close two, the tab bar disappears and the window actually gets smaller. Like the Safari window resizes itself just a little bit. And I use Moom on my Mac, which great new update from Moom this past week. We'll put a link to that in the show notes to resize my windows. And I use it on my laptop, but it really comes in handy on my big 34-inch widescreen here at home, where you've got all this space to work with, and you can put your windows all over the place. And that Safari window just bumping up like 20 pixels just annoys the mess out of me. And I'm always resizing it back. And so I've actually gotten to where I just keep two tabs open all the time. Even if I don't need one, I'll open something else up. You know, I'll just open up some other page or something just so I have two open so it never resizes back down.
Jim, you can turn on an option so it shows the tab bar all the time. So if there's not a tab open, it still has that tabbed bar size.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll have to find that setting in Safari.
This is where I'm going to play the sound effect for The More You Know.
It's under the View menu, Jim.
Okay. So always show the tab bar. But see, now I'm using Chrome again, and I like it. I even exported my bookmarks out of Safari because, you know, over the last 6 months, I've added a lot of different stuff in there. And so I exported my bookmarks out, and I deleted all my bookmarks from Chrome and then re-imported all my bookmarks back in from Safari. Yeah, it's so nice.
I guess as somebody on a laptop who travels a lot, you like having less battery life.
Yeah, I don't really notice that too much. I mean, I'm plugged in most of the time. If I'm not on battery, then I'm generally not in a web browser. I'm doing something else. So, you know, I'm in a meeting with my laptop. So I'm in, you know, PowerPoint or, I mean, with my laptop, the biggest battery eater is always going to be Parallels because I'm running Windows in a VM, and that eats up your battery fast as hell. I mean, there's no getting around because I tell it optimize for performance, not for battery, because I want Windows running as fast as it can. And I've got all these database, you know, SQL Assistant windows for Teradata open and my Oracle SQL developer open and all that stuff's running. So Chrome is the least of my worries at that point.
You'd really be better off just running in a dual boot scenario with macOS and a virtual machine. It would actually suit your situation a lot better, I think.
It probably would. You're right.
You dirty Windows user, you.
Yeah, it makes me feel dirty. Like, I'm a dirty, dirty man when I get in there.
It's unfortunate, but Windows does have its place in the world.
No, I totally get it, and I'll fire up Windows in a VM. Not to the extent that Jim does, but yeah, no, I totally get it. I just, as someone who doesn't use Chrome on the regular, the extensions thing is a good point. There are a lot more extensions for Chrome than there are for Safari. I just don't use a lot of them. I must be the most outside edge case of anyone that I've ever seen, because I don't, if I'm in a browser, I'm just usually browsing the web. Ad blockers are the only really thing that I need, that I would say that I need. I'm not OCD about the window placement and the other stuff that you do, so that stuff doesn't bother. Not that it's not valid, it's not a use case that I even considered.
Which ad blocker are you using for Safari now?
I still use AdBlock Pro, and I use what's the other one? OneBlocker, I guess. I use a combination of those. I have to disable multiple ad blockers when I go to a site.
I use OneBlocker.
Give uBlock Origin a try.
I do need to try that.
That's the one I use for Chrome, Brad.
Do they have one for Safari, Brad?
It was forked off on GitHub, so you can get one. It's alpha quality, but it seems to be very stable. I've not had it give me any problems, and unfortunately there's no whitelist syncing, so if you wanted to have the same whitelist in Chrome that you do in Safari, you'll have to export one and import it in the other, or just copy paste, and it will you can hit save or append, and it will sort out all the duplicates.
Not a huge deal, I suppose. I mean, again, I stay in Safari most of the time, so wouldn't really affect me too much. So the extensions are a big draw for you, Jim, and the tabs.
Yeah, the extensions, the tabs, just the feel. I swear it feels faster to me. I know you're shaking your head. I know. And even Apple has said it's faster, but somehow it just feels faster to me. The one thing, I put this in the show notes, the one thing about Safari that I really miss when I'm in Chrome is in Safari, you can right-click an image and immediately just do save to desktop. Boom, it's there. In Chrome, there might actually be an extension that I could find that would actually add that to my right-click menu. But in Chrome, you kind of got to right-click and do save as, and then you tell it where you wanted to put it. Safari's got that real quick, just right-click, save to desktop immediately, which is really convenient.
So on Chrome, are you doing a caching of your websites, a pre-cache or whatever? Is that still a thing? I know that used to be a thing a while ago, where you could have it preload.
No, I don't think so. I don't have any of those things set. So I don't know. It just feels more natural to me than Safari. Isn't that odd? Even on OS X, I mean, it just feels
where it does not have a native app feel at all.
Right. I don't know. I guess I used Chrome for so long that I think it just feels more like a natural browse. You know, it's just the browser to me. And I finally switched back to Safari when Apple started, souping up Safari a little bit, a year or so ago, trying to catch up with Chrome. And they've done well. I mean, like I said, I've been using Safari for the last 6 months at least since I got my new laptop. But it did feel good to browse around in Chrome a little bit yesterday.
So am I the only one that ever pulls up the handoff option to see what's open on what browser where? I mean, that's why I don't depend on the icons, I guess. I can pull up something. That's more or less on other computers, I guess, that it shows that. But if you do that in Safari, you should see a list of everything that you have open. I mean, I know it's not as handy as looking at the icons, but am I the only one that does that?
No, I do it too at times, because I'll think, I know I saw a website the other day and I'm sitting here looking in my, I'm just looking at the local history, say on my phone or whatever device is in my hand. So then I will do what you were talking about and look and see, and it may, that device history that I'm talking about may be on a different device.
But you also get a list of, you get a thumbnail of all of your tabs. So I know it's not as convenient, but it's just used to how you get used to working, I guess, because this is something that doesn't ever really impact me, because if I click on the little, the two interlocking squares, I get thumbnails of all of my current sites, and I get to see what's open on all my other machines that are signed into iCloud. So I don't know. Never seemed like it was that big a deal to me, but I think I guess I must be an outside use case.
You are definitely an outside use case on a lot of things, Mr. Baggett.
I'm unusual. I realize that. I learned long ago there's no one quite like me. Ulysses, the popular Markdown-based editor, moved to subscription pricing this week. Do you guys use Ulysses? I know that I have in the past.
I don't use it.
I haven't used it either, so.
I think I use it. I use editors about like Jim uses to-do lists. I have OneWriter, I have Ulysses, I have all of these different things. Editorial. I think editorial is the coolest just because of the workflows that you can kick off from it. If you want to do some powerful stuff, it is pretty neat in terms of what it does.
I used to get all of those. I used to be more of a notepad kind of hoarder and try them all out. And eventually I just kind of finally got away from it. You know, there's always been some great ones for iPad and iPhone. And I think Ulysses just came out after I had kind of stopped buying them. So it's probably why I haven't touched it. And I'm more of a notepad, like a shorter note editor. And Ulysses always struck me as more of a like a copy editor, like you were writing longer stories and things like that.
Yeah, for long form, it's really not bad. I do own it for iOS and the Mac. So I think on the Mac, it was like $45, and on iOS, it was like $25. It was never cheap. They lay out a nice reasoning on their Medium page about why they moved to a subscription-based model. And, you know, I totally get it. I wonder if it's going to be successful. The one thing that I didn't like that sort of struck me as odd is, you know, current users get 50% off for life. I'm like, wow, that sounds great. And the yearly fee is, I think, $40. So I open up Ulysses and it's like, you know, move to this model now for $30. And I'm thinking, oh, wait a minute, $30 is not, should be $20 if it's 50% off. Well, if you pay by the year, you get a discount, but it's 50% off the monthly price, which is the higher price. Long story short, it's 25% off. To actually take advantage of it, you have to do the yearly option, I think. That bit of disingenuous
kind of
sort of
trickeration right there, right?
Yeah, it was kind of like, look, man, don't just say what you mean. Just if you're offering 25% off, that's still generous. You don't have to do it at all, and I'm grateful for it. But don't call it 50% off, because no one, if you're going to do it, you're probably going to do it by the year. You're probably not going to do it by the month, I would imagine. If you're enough of a fan, you want to support it, you're going to go for the cheapest price you can get, which would be the yearly pricing. So just say 25% off. If I want 50% off the monthly price, I don't know. It seemed a little weird to me. Like, just call it what it is. Don't try to make it sound like it's greater than what it is. It's 25% off, ultimately, effectively. I don't know. I think I'll play around with editorial some more. I've liked that one for a while. It went a while without updates, and now they've started updating it again, and it's very powerful. There's a lot of plugins and workflows you can do to it. You can automatically insert links from iTunes and affiliates and things like that. So when you're filling out notes or sending things to people, just all sorts of, if you're a power user, it's really kind of cool. Not that there's anything wrong with Ulysses. I like Ulysses a lot.
I might have editorial. I'm not sure. I'll have to look. I know I've got Pythonista, which had a lot of different other cool features and stuff in it.
I just don't write in long form anymore. If I do anything, if I need an editor for anything, I use BBEdit.
No, Editorial and Pythonista are made by the same company. It's OMZ Software. And I think Pythonista got in trouble with iOS a few years ago with Apple because they allowed you to do scripts or scripting from within an app, which was a no-no. So that was weird. But they got it all ironed out. But Editorial is a pretty cool thing if you're looking for an alternative to Ulysses. But Ulysses is a great app. I liked it. I liked the dark mode. And I liked it enough to spend, I think, over $70 on it. So not bad. I don't know, $40 a year or $30 a year for an editor seems a little bit on the steep side, since pretty much it does everything that I need it to do now.
Yeah, we'll have to go down that rabbit hole another day, because on the Mac, I'm super picky about my editors, and we can talk about that on a separate show.
But real quick, just to touch on that topic, you do use the Visual Studio editor as your primary editor on the Mac now. Is that still a thing?
Yeah, Visual Studio Code. It's very nice. I really enjoy it. I use it on Windows side and Mac side. So Microsoft just went and redeemed themselves right there with a great piece of software.
Interesting. Well, I think that's all that we had really to talk about. David Letterman's returning to TV with a Netflix talk show. You guys excited about that?
I am pretty excited about it. I was always a big fan of Letterman. Even back in his NBC years, I can recall watching it. You know, when I was a kid, I'd stay up some nights and I always felt like an adult, you know, watching TV, staying up that late. And it was always a good time to watch David Letterman. And he always had usually some more edgier musical acts than you would see maybe on The Tonight Show.
I think I'm most excited about it to see Letterman on cable, to just kind of see what he says and, you know, just no holds barred, saying whatever he wants. I'm sure that's got to be part of the deal is, you know, he can say and do what he wants here. You know, it's kind of like putting Stern on XM, right? He could just go off and do whatever he wants. Well, now we're taking Letterman off of, you know, cable TV or, you know, the standard TV and putting him on Netflix. And, you know, so if he wants to get a little bit edgier and like Brad said, you know, get some edgier guests, you know, they won't have to edit, you know, if Miley Cyrus decides to show him, you know, her boobs or anything like that, you know, so it should be a pretty interesting to see Dave on Netflix, just see, because he always struck me as, you know, just a guy that really wanted to say what was on his mind, and he did the best he could on that show doing it, but now being totally unrestricted, I think it'll be interesting.
His NBC show was a lot better than the CBS one. I think it was more subversive and it had this feel of nobody's really watching, so I can do whatever I want. When he moved to the earlier time slot, it became much more of a standard type of TV show. Not that it wasn't good, but you know, the NBC days are also what I grew up on as a kid. So I don't know. I looked more forward to. I liked the NBC show better than the CBS, and I hope that the Netflix show is more akin to that.
I think you're totally right. He was more in the public eye once he hit the CBS show because of all the, basically, the media surrounding the move. It basically made that show in the spotlight from then on out.
Just like Conan, he wanted to be Johnny Carson for some reason when he should have just been happy being himself. But that's not to say, I mean, I am looking forward to this. I think it'll be cool. I did like the announcement where he said, if you retire to spend time with your family, check with your family first. I thought that was a very Dave thing to say.
Yep, that looks like all we had.
Yeah, looks like we're done for the week. So, any parting words, any things you guys want to mention before we go?
I think I'm all good this week. Go home and fire up Chrome and test it out.
You Chrome Fidel. What about you, Brad?
Just want to say hey to all of our listeners. So, hey.
Yeah, we got a lot of new listeners out there. Thanks. Thanks for all the new subscribers. Please tell your friends about us if you like us, and tell your friends about us if you don't like us. Anytime you mention Infinite Loopback is a good mention.
Even if you tell us we suck, we don't care. We're going to keep sucking. We're happy with that. We're fine where we are in life.
Yeah, no, I've seen a lot of people say, you know, press is press. Good press, bad press. You know, if people listen to us because they don't like us, or they listen to us because they like us, they're still listening. So that's all that counts. I mean, in my heart, I really want you to like us, but listen.
All right, well, fellas, that should do it for this week. See you next week. Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. You can find us on Twitter. The Twitter handle for the show is @infinloopback. That's @infinloopback. I am @BrianB. That's @BrianB. Jim is @BigJim. That's @BigJim. And Brad is @MeesterIdle. That's @MeesterIdle. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.